Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Thursday, the 22nd of June 2017. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I am Abubakar Jalo with your responses and comment on social media.
Coming up on the program, South Africa's Constitutional Court gives a go-ahead to Parliament to decide on whether a no-confidence vote against President Jacob Zuma can be held in secret.
We will ensure that when the Speaker makes the decision that she has to now make as to whether or not it should be an open ballot or a secret ballot.
Midwives in Africa slowly being replaced by hospitals and doctors. Could this be the end of midwifery in Africa?
Midwifery is already respected. We now need to make sure that the infrastructure is strengthened to really support midwifery.
And I have your responses to some of these stories. And if you are also listening to us on Facebook Live, welcome to this program.
That's right, Inid Abu, and I can't wait to listen to that. But before all that, here's another chance to hear what's been happening around the world.
My name is Jane Nyinge with DW News. South Africa's Constitutional Court has ruled the Speaker of Parliament has powers to decide whether a motion of no confidence against President Jacob Zuma can be held by secret ballot. The Speaker of the National Assembly, Bale Kambete, had earlier said there were no parliamentary mechanism for such a vote. Opposition leader Musiwa Lekuta welcomed the ruling, calling it a victory for the opposition parties.
This is the triumph of democracy. Ours is a new democracy. The constitutional clauses that the Constitutional Court dealt with today have not been interpreted before. In interpreting them, the court has made it clear that those of us who are elected and having taken our oath of office owe it to the people of South Africa as a whole, that no political party can compel a member of parliament to vote against their conscience and against their judgment. And the threats that were being issued against members of the caucuses, especially the caucus of the ruling party, those fears are no longer having a place in our democracy.
The European Union has today announced Uganda will receive $85 million in humanitarian aid and long-term development assistance to deal with refugee crises. Uganda is currently home to over 1.2 million refugees, mostly from neighboring South Sudan. The British government says around 600 high-rise buildings across the country could be covered with similar cladding suspected to have contributed to a fire that killed 79 people in London. The opposition leader, Jeremy Corbyn, called for urgent checks on around 4,000 buildings, adding that the government has failed its people.
From Hillsborough to the child sex abuse scandal to Grenfell Tower, the pattern is consistent. Working class people's voices are ignored, their concerns dismissed by those in power. The Grenfell Tower residents and North Kensington community deserve answers, and thousands of people living in tower blocks around the country need very urgent reassurance.
European Union leaders are meeting in Brussels. Top issues on the agenda being counter-terrorism, closer European defence cooperation, migration and Brexit. French President Emmanuel Macron said France and Germany will work together to relaunch the European Union project as Britain prepares to leave. The High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Federica Mogherini, had this to say before the start of the meeting.
I will first of all present to the heads of state and government the progress we've made on defence. I expect from the leaders to give further inputs to our work, especially on establishing a permanent structured cooperation on the European defence and the use of battle groups. And I think they will welcome the enormous steps we've done with the establishment here in Brussels of a military conduct and planning capability and a lot of work done, especially on the European Defence Fund. This is one of the fields where the European Union project can be relaunched, and I expect strong leadership from our heads of state and government to give further input so that foreign and defence ministers, together with me, can follow this work up.
The two-day meeting ends tomorrow. At least 26 people have been killed and 59 others injured when an explosion rocked a local bank in Afghanistan's city of Lahore. Among the dead were government employees and soldiers waiting to receive their wages. For more news and information, visit dw.com or download the DW app. My name is Jane Nyinge.
Welcome once again to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jalo. And if you are listening to us on Facebook Live, also welcome. Don't hesitate to put your comment down there. We'll definitely read
them. We are live there, and you shall always read them whenever we can. We begin the program in South Africa, where the Constitutional Court has ruled that lawmakers can cast secret ballots in a no-confidence vote in President Jacob Zuma, who's facing mounting criticism within the ruling ANC. Opposition parties have lobbied for a secret ballot and called for African National Congress ANC lawmakers to vote with their conscience, but Speaker Baleka Mbete had in April said she had no powers whatsoever to approve a secret ballot. The ANC holds a large majority in parliament, and Zuma has survived similar votes in the past which have not been secret. Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The Constitutional Court Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng delivered his verdict today, one which was supported by the full bench of the Constitutional Court.
The United Democratic Movement's request for a motion of no confidence in the president to be decided by secret ballot is remitted to the Speaker for her to make a fresh decision.
The opposition has welcomed the decision as a victory for the voices that wish South Africa well. James Self is the Federal Executive Chairperson of the Democratic Alliance Party.
We will ensure that when the Speaker makes the decision that she has to now make as to whether or not it should be an open ballot or a secret ballot, that that decision is a rational decision that supports the Constitution, that supports freedom, that supports fairness, and supports the people of South Africa.
However, experts say the opposition should not start celebrating yet. The court made it clear that it is up to the Speaker to decide whether the ballot should be a secret one or open. Political analyst Sipho Siyebe says this will not be an easy decision for the Speaker to make.
When you talk about somebody having discretionary powers, what it means that the person would apply her mind and based on a number of considerations come to a particular position. So there is no obligation on a part to say it must be.
Meanwhile, the ANC caucus in Parliament released a statement saying they are confident that its members will not vote in support of a motion to remove their own president. The party vows that it will defeat the motion of no confidence, whether it is done in secret or in the open. Although no date has been set for such a vote, the decision is now up to the Speaker, who is also expected to set a date for the motion of no confidence in President Jacob Zuma.
Tuzo Kumalo with that report. Abu, over to you.
And some responses here. One from Ichechikera Aba from Nigeria. He said, a speaker that doesn't know his capabilities is equivalent to a National Assembly that doesn't know how the feelings of the masses are.
Interesting there. El Shaddai Akipeng from Accra, Ghana says the humanitarian crisis on the continent is higher compared to the fraction of Africans immigrating to Europe. Europe, with all its resources, is lamenting about the crisis of migration, while low and middle-income countries of Africa keep receiving these refugees, even though resources are limited.
Yes, and another one here from Papa Ashon, who's writing from Ghana, said, victory for democracy there in South Africa, good move by the lawmakers to issue such a ruling. Look at the allegations leveled at Mr. Zuma. A secret ballot is best in order to really ascertain his level of party confidence in him.
Keep those comments flowing anyway. Germany could restart its deportation program of failed asylum seekers to Afghanistan as soon as next week. The revelations came after another suicide bomber this Thursday killed at least 36 people outside a bank. Germany had stopped its controversial deportation program earlier this month after the Afghan capital of Kabul, considered to be a safe zone, was struck with one of the deadliest suicide bombings. Next week's deportations could take place as early as Wednesday, according to local reports. Abaro Halida has the details.
German media reports say Berlin is set to continue deporting Afghan nationals who've been denied refugee status. Deportations to Afghanistan have been controversial and were stopped following recent terror attacks in Kabul. The German embassy in the Afghan capital was badly damaged in an attack in May. Past attempts at repatriations attracted demonstrations at German airports. Germany's Der Spiegel magazine is reporting that a charter plane will take a group of Afghans from Leipzig to Kabul next week. Authorities say the deportees have been classified as criminal offenders, potential attackers, and those who refuse to identify themselves.
Abaro Halida with that report. In Africa, midwives have long been respected and useful in helping women to give birth. Slowly, they have been replaced by modern hospitals and doctors. But according to the founder, president of the Wellbeing Foundation of Africa, who was attending a congress in Canada on the role of midwives, all is not lost, and many still view this profession highly. Take a listen.
You know, midwifery as a profession in Africa is actually viewed very highly. Midwives are often the pillars of community life and community society. They're trusted members in their communities, and the women actually will very happily go to a midwife first because they probably even know her in a social context, and then when they're pregnant, they find her easier to approach. Secondly, midwifery care is actually a pretty good investment because it's not as expensive as care with a doctor. I personally do actually promote midwives being integrated into health systems. Midwifery is already respected, but what we need to do now, you know, we've done the advocacy, we've raised the visibility and the voices of midwives. We now need to make sure that the infrastructure is strengthened to really support midwifery as a premium choice of care and counsel for mothers during their pregnancy.
I'd like to change topics a little bit here. As I don't know if you're aware, but the G20 summit is coming up next month in Hamburg. What do you think African countries expect from this summit?
A lot of African countries view the G20 summit as somewhere where the rest of the world is going to decide how it helps Africa. But I also do know that African leaders are now taking a more proactive approach. For instance, at this Congress, I have been joined by His Excellency Jakaya Kikwete to do a major call for greater and more strategic investments in midwifery. So we are equalizing the terrain so that we can begin to have better bilateral partnerships where instead of looking at aid, we are looking at it more as an investment in social impact. And I think that is the way to go in a resource-constrained world.
That was Toyin Ojara-Saraki, president of Wellbeing Foundation Africa, speaking to Africa Link's Eunice Wanjiru.
And this is quite an interesting topic in Africa. Our followers have basically been commenting so much on this. We have this response from Ali Ahmed Elmin from Somalia.
The problem is lack of midwifery or a lack of a good midwifery. Many African women are bear their newborn in countryside. And in the countryside, there is no MCH or any midwifery. And especially in Somalia, many pregnant women are die with their newborn because of lack of midwifery, lack of medicine, lack of mediation, and lack of government can cause also.
And that was Ali Ahmed Elmin from Somalia. And the response here from Kwabina in Ghana, he says, I don't think stillbirth are as a result of women delivering by traditional birth attendants. The issue of stillbirth can be solved by effective antenatal services like education.
And Emmanuel Kisiedu, also from Tamale, northern Ghana, says midwives could help, of course, but here in Ghana, they are the cause of more mother and child death than any single contributor. I have lost a baby through their negligence, and I'm honestly afraid to even go back there with my pregnant wife.
And the final response on this topic is from Lamin Fadera from Brefu in the Gambia. He said, it's simply to engage highly qualified midwives to reduce or prevent maternal mortality.
Thanks indeed, Abu, for the comments. We really appreciate your comments. Please keep them flowing to our Facebook page, DW Africa, and we'll always read them whenever we can. And just in case you've just joined us, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. And we also welcome you if you are just joining us on Facebook Live.
Thanks indeed for that. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, a Cameroonian young entrepreneur first becoming a role model for her skills.
You can consume coffee as a drink, a cold drink, like Coca-Cola and any other drink.
And Uganda and the United Nations are appealing for aid for South Sudanese refugees. Your response is to this story.
Well, and especially to that, the government is appealing for at least $2 billion to take care of refugees from South Sudan who have fled their country because of the ongoing conflict. At a UN-backed summit that begins tomorrow, Uganda is expected to appeal for much-needed aid from the donor community to support close to a million South Sudanese refugees who have been left at the mercy of handouts from ordinary Ugandans. Considered to be the most progressive refugee policy in the world, Uganda allows refugees freedom of movement and they can operate their own businesses. In addition to that, Ugandans have in recent days handed out plots of land to the refugees to improve on their livelihood, yet South Sudan's refugee crisis is testing the limits of Uganda's generosity with the continuing influx, exerting a lot of pressure on the available resources. Sabine Boland reports.
They come with the little they could save from their homes. They come in their thousands every day. The border between South Sudan and Uganda is controlled, but officials there let all refugees through. Almost a million people have fled war and famine-ridden South Sudan for neighbouring Uganda. They arrive desperate and exhausted. Uganda has a model refugee policy. After being registered in a camp, most refugees are given a piece of land, like here in the north of the country. Maria Lalum and her grandchildren have been here since the beginning of the year. It's the third time I've had to leave my country. Firstly, because of the conflict with Sudan and now this war. Both my children and my grandchildren were born in refugee camps. Only a really solid government could convince me to return to my home country. But I don't think that will happen in my lifetime. Despite the small piece of land, life here is hard. Maria Lalum has to get by with just 4 kilos of corn flour a week for 8 people. Still, after being separated while fleeing, the family is happy to just be together. After South Sudan gained independence in 2011, hopes for peace were high. But the people were to be bitterly disappointed when just 2 years later the country descended into civil war.
Our hope was for our development of our countries and to make the good relationship and the business along our neighbours. You see? But they have to really see the struggle of the people, the suffering.
Uganda's open door policy is increasingly proving a strain on the country. It now desperately needs international aid to cope with the new arrivals.
When you integrate refugees with the host population, you cannot discriminate. You want that ability to provide services to both host populations and the refugees at the same time. Given the economic situations in all our developing world countries, we are already struggling.
Water, for example, is in short supply in the north of the country. Adequate supplies of food, schools and medicine are needed for hundreds of thousands of people. But despite the strain, Uganda's door remains open to those in need.
Sabine Boland with that report on South Sudanese refugees. Now, Abu, anything to do with refugees, it
does attract
many comments.
Yeah.
What do we have for us?
Papa Ashon, writing from Ghana, said, this is a clear example of ethnocentrism seeping into the political fore. Need for ceasefire and a clear plan for those refugees.
Abdulaziz Mohamed Sani from Kumasi, Ghana, says, it has just crossed my little mind that it's possible for the UN to arrange a meeting of both the government and the opposition of South Sudan in Ghana here. The UN can initially meet the Ghanaian officials to train on the right things to say. I mean, he's trying to say that his country can play a moderating, you know, indeed, role. Yeah.
Yeah. And a response here from Didays from Rwanda. He says, may God bless Uganda. They understand the life of being a refugee. The international help is required because the number of refugees in Uganda outweighs the capacity of that country to provide with them all they need.
Once again, we really appreciate your comments and being part of the show. Keep that going.
Views on.
Now, Cameroonian entrepreneur Selamo Dorothy Benla is fast becoming a role model among the youth for her skills and acumen when it comes to transforming agricultural products, not only to give them a longer shelf life, but also to improve diets in a country that still suffers from food insecurity. Her latest innovation is Next Coffee, an improved coffee enriched with local spices. At only 30, she has also given value to Africa's highest consumed product, cassava. For her efforts, she has been recognized during some international conventions as a leading innovator. DW Zingala Kilian Shimtom reports.
House coffee.
Bunched up around a table at the Esplanade of the Yaoundé Sports Complex, a group of people sip their cups of coffee. It is a coffee tasting day, but what this group is drinking is no ordinary coffee. It is the latest innovation of Cameroonian entrepreneur Selamo Dorothy Benla, trademarked Next Coffee.
Next Coffee is in form of food drink in cans. We made it also a soluble form. I also do it in a, that's the way you can sieve. You can consume coffee as a drink, a cold drink, like Coca-Cola and any other drink. That's a habit that we don't have in Cameroon, consuming coffee. The particularity with Next Coffee, why I said it was an innovation, is that we have added other aromatic plants, medicinal plants like ginger, like celery, like clove, like thyme. So with the mixture of this, it becomes diuretic. You don't have this effect of caffeine.
Benla said the idea came from her six-year-old daughter, who complained that the coffee they were drinking was too bitter and that it should be mixed with some of her mother's spices. Now, Next Coffee as a product is gaining traction in coffee shops in the country's capital, Yaoundé. But this isn't her only innovation. She has also worked in transforming products like cassava and cocoa. She tells us how.
We have made noodles, that's pasta out of cassava. We have made drinks, food drinks. We have made kits, that's you can have instantaneous meals. We have made biscuits. We have made simple flour, that's refinable flour that you can use for cake. You can use for any pastry that you wish. So you see, cassava can be used for so many purposes.
Benla gives Cameroonian food products not only a longer shelf life, but a more enriched food value. In her school-going days, she frequently had to eat tapioca, which is starch extracted from the cassava root. As a teacher, she has come to the understanding that school children need a more balanced diet in order to study better.
Most often, they have puff-puff and pap. Most often, they always fill in their bread with pasta. What they eat really is not balanced. So I thought, what can I do to solve this problem?
The 30-year-old now has the license to market her products at the University of Yaoundé and in a couple of other secondary schools. She has already invested close to $10,000 in her business and makes a profit of 120% on her investment. Yet her capacity to produce on an industrial scale is limited given the financial burden involved. For Selamo Dorothy Benla, government support is essential in expanding her business, but the absence of it will never hold her back.
DW Zingala Kiliam Shimtom with that report.
Speaking out.
Now, violations of human rights in Africa may be on the rise, but time and again, people have become more repressive in demanding for their rights. Cases of human rights abuse were rampant in countries like, are still rampant in countries like Zimbabwe, Burundi, and Ethiopia. According to Amnesty International's Secretary General Salil Shetty, there were about 20 public mass protests in Africa this year alone. Our correspondent Usman Shehu talked to Salil, and he started off by asking about the new awakening in Africa, where people are not afraid to demand for their rights.
The reason why we are seeing so much repression of human rights defenders and crushing of protests, etc., is because people are standing up. So when people are standing up and raising their voice, governments should be listening to them, not crushing them. But unfortunately, our governments are not used to listening to people's voices, you know. So, but I think if you look at what happened in the Gambia, a peaceful change, young people standing up in Burkina Faso, I can go country by country, people are not accepting unaccountable governments, they're not accepting inequality, they're going to raise their voice. Young people, girls, women, amazing things are happening.
How is the situation now in countries like Ethiopia, where here and there things are blocked?
No, Ethiopia is not good. In fact, I was there just last month, and you know, we were about to launch a report on the Africa Union, on the peace machinery and peace and security machinery in Ethiopia, and our meeting was blocked, you know, it was banned from happening in the Hilton Hotel in Addis Ababa. Even there, you know, you have this bloggers who are raising their voice, you have journalists who are raising their voice despite all of the challenges. So Ethiopia has a very forward-looking constitution, a very progressive constitution of power sharing. But in practice, they do not allow any dissident voices. So,
what do you think need to be done in countries like Burundi at the moment?
No, I think there should be, first of all, the East African community, the EAC states and the neighbors should put pressure, the Great Lakes region. That's not happening adequately. The UN system is itself somewhat constrained. So, you know, we expect them to do much more. But they should allow, you know, special independent observers to come in, to be able to talk to the communities. You know, Burundi is crushing journalists, civil society, and people are losing their lives. It's a very bad situation. Same with DRC. The Kasai province situation is really, really bad.
Presently in Nigeria, the military fighting Boko Haram, there are a lot of reports about human rights abuses. Is Amnesty aware of that?
Amnesty is the one who exposed a lot of the abuses by the from the government side. But there's no question that Boko Haram has committed war crimes, very serious crimes against ordinary people, civilians. But unfortunately, the response from the Nigerian military has been also equally not in keeping with human rights law and standards. We've actually named the 9 military commanders who we feel have been directly responsible for a lot of these violations. It's urgent that there's a very independent investigation which happens, an unbiased, efficient and quick investigation. People are waiting for justice. They cannot keep waiting longer.
What are the evidence do you found?
Oh, we found extensive evidence. We've produced multiple reports. It's all on our website. Nigeria is one of the countries which has the largest military budget, one of the largest armies. But the people in the front line who were facing the bullets of Boko Haram did not have anything to defend themselves with. And worse still, the military have committed very serious atrocities against civilians just by alleging that they are Boko Haram.
That was Amnesty International Secretary General Salil Shetty. Abubakar, I see you're planning to tell me something.
Yes, it's about this midwife story that we aired earlier on the show. And as I told you before, every time you talk about maternal mortality, you do have a lot of responses. Here is one from a young Blaise in Cameroon.
I want to think here that the best way to prevent maternal mortality in Africa is to put in place the right medical facilities, especially in rural communities. Secondly, even in places where these facilities are found, governments and other stakeholders should make sure that the cost is reduced, because so many people sometimes do not access the healthcare, do not access the hospitals, especially women. Women do not access hospitals, and even those that do, they are unable to foot the bills, and sometimes those in charge do not attend to them because they don't have the money that is demanded or requested from them.
Good points there from a young place. And another one here from Ariemu Isiaka from Nigeria.
Women don't want technology to come into this particular process. For instance, they like to do it the normal way, the traditional method. And as per the track record of African medicine and the process of birth in Africa, it's not been effective. So one would think there is a need to get in more alternative methods like the CS and things like that, if it will make it better.
Those are the responses to Arimu Isiaka, and the emotions are pretty high on this story.
Yeah, keep them flowing in the comments on our Facebook, DW Africa, and we always read them whenever we can. Send it, Abu.
That's it, yeah.
And on behalf of my colleagues here in the studios, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Abubakar Jallo.